Announcements. The Women in Recovery Book Group meets virtually on the second Thursday of each month. The book group next meets online Thursday, May 12th at 6:30 to discuss opening our hearts, transforming our losses. And that is one of Al-Anon's CAL pieces of literature. Visit Women in Recovery's website for updates, and do feel free to attend the book club whether or not you've read the book. It is always a rich discussion. You can email questions or comments about book club to Peg at wir@theretreat.org. WIR listserv, if you would like to receive monthly WIR emails, please write your name and email in the chat to be added to the listserv. We do need first and last names in it, so if you are comfortable, please write in the chat or privately to someone with WIR next to their name. Otherwise, a Woman in Recovery board member will follow up via email to request it. Those of you who attended in-person speaker nights may recall we would pass a basket to help cover expenses. In that spirit, there is now a donate button on the Women in Recovery page on the retreat's website. As with in-person meetings, no contribution is necessary. We are appreciative of any and all contributions. If you are interested in learning more about service opportunities with Women in Recovery, please let us know in the chat. At this time, the program committee, which plans these speaker nights, and the marketing committee have openings. And now let's get started on tonight's presentation. Women in Recovery is pleased to welcome Joseph Bailey. Joe will share from his new book, Thriving in the Eye of the Hurricane, A Guide to Finding True Serenity in Recovery and Being Resilient in the Face of All the Challenges We Face in Our Turbulent World Today. He will share principles that guide us to the hope of transformation and awakening to our true spiritual nature. Joe is a mastered licensed psychologist, author, seminar leader, consultant, public speaker, and psychotherapist. His work has included co-founding the Minneapolis Institute of Mental Health, developing programs for numerous hospitals, and working extensively in treatment centers for addictions. Welcome, Joe, and I will turn it over to you now.
Thanks, Trish. And thank you all for being here. It's so nice to see all of the faces. I can't see the faces of all of you in the classroom, but I can see there's a big group of women there. So welcome to all of you. And I'm going to just talk for a bit, but I really want to make this a conversation. Even if you're not speaking or asking a question, I feel that in this talk, I really want to just join with each of you, because all of us really are united in our true essence. All of us are the same. That part of us, that spark of life, that essence of our human spirit that we came into the world with, is something that we can never destroy. We can't even tarnish it. We can't damage it. We can only cover it up with a misunderstanding of who we really are. And in that way, we're all here together. We're all one. We're all of the same essence. There is no difference between any of us, whether I'm a male or female, I'm black or white, American or Chinese, or wherever I'm from, we're all united in that one essence. But we lose consciousness. Awareness of that as we go through this game of life, as we go through the the challenges that each of us has had in life, and no one is immune from that. All of us, life is a contact sport. We have issues with our relationship, with what we think people are thinking about us, finances, what's going on in the world today, the war in Ukraine, the climate crisis. Our minds are filled from the media with just all of these things that we could worry about, all of these things that we can scare ourselves with. And so we can all get lost, even if we've got a long recovery. We cannot be in touch with that serenity. We cannot really have the gift of recovery. Because the gift of recovery is more than just abstinence. That's not really the essence of it. The essence of it is that we find our true self, our true connection to that spiritual essence of everything. So I want to talk with you tonight about, first of all, how that's who you already are. You don't have to do anything to get it. It's a given. It's something that is your birthright. And secondly, that we're all living in a world every moment of our own thinking. So how we experience life isn't a direct one-on-one experience with the circumstances or the situation that we're in. All of you here right now are having a completely different experience of what I'm saying. All of you are hearing different words, even though I'm only one person speaking. You're hearing it through the filter, through the perceptual filter of your own thinking in this moment. One moment you might be thinking about something that has nothing to do with what I'm saying. You're distracted, you're off kind of in la la land, and that's what you're experiencing. Others might be thinking about what's he going to say next. So I would invite you to practice with me tonight. One of the skills, one of the things that has been more helpful to me than anything on my journey is deep listening. To listen without preconceived notions of what you're hearing, without interpreting through your bias, through your thoughts going in your head. When you listen from the heart, when you listen with nothing on your mind, you're much more likely to get impacted. You're much more likely, and I don't mean impacted by me, because any insight that you get from this conversation we're going to have tonight is actually going to come from your own unique divine essence. You're going to have a different insight than you, and you, and you, and you, and you. Each of you are going to have a tailor-made insight for you at this time, at this moment, in your recovery, in your life. So don't blame me for your insights. I can't give you an insight. All I can do is point to the source of that insight that is within you. 24/7, every moment of your life, it's been there. I don't know about you, but much of my life, I ignored it. Oh, if it's coming from me, it can't be right. What would I know? And I would listen to other people. I would listen to experts. I would read it in books. I would be influenced by other people. I was always looking outside for truth. I was always looking outside for what I should do, because I didn't know to trust myself. Funny, one thing I was just thinking of that just came to my mind. I don't know how the mind works sometimes, but I just recalled when I was a little boy, and I was the youngest of five kids. And so my brothers and sisters were all riding bikes. I was still on my tricycle. And I couldn't wait to ride a bike. I just couldn't wait to ride a bike. When am I going to get? So I finally got a bike. But they had training, you know, those training wheels on the side. And it was kind of embarrassing. I'm riding my bike, but I got training wheels. I wanted to be a big kid that had no balance on my own. And so every night, finally they took the training wheels off of my bike. But every night after dinner, my dad would take me out to the sidewalk and he would hold the back of the seat. Any of your moms or dads do that for you? And so this night, after doing this for probably a week or two, we'd ride along, and it was like I was getting my confidence up. Oh, I can do this. I don't have my training wheels on. But of course, Dad was there holding the bike. So one night, I get to the end of the sidewalk, and I turn around, and my dad's at the other end of the sidewalk. And guess what happened? I immediately fell over. Crash. But I had this experience of balancing the bike. I couldn't erase that. I couldn't get that out of my mind. I had actually ridden the bike. I can do it. I know I can do it. Remember that feeling? Oh, I was so ecstatic, I couldn't believe it. And so I got on my bike and I'm kind of wobbly all over the place and I would fall from time to time. But I got better and better with each day because I had that experience of knowing that I could balance my own bike. Treatment's a little like my dad. Help from others in recovery is a little like my dad. We were there to support one another, but ultimately we want you to find your own insight about balancing yourself in this world of turbulence, of uncertainty, of the unknown, the future. So once you know that you can find that balance, and I will call that for tonight, I would call it serenity, because we're in recovery here, or we could call it resilience, because resilience is the ability to bounce back, right? It's the ability to recover from adversity. It's the ability to think creatively and insightfully when there is no answers, to go inside and come up with a new thought, with a new insight that will guide us into the unknown. I wrote this book, Thriving in the Eye of the Hurricane, because I was so fortunate to learn from my teacher 40 years ago that I was whole, that I was complete, that I wasn't broken, that I wasn't my labels, I wasn't my habits. I was this spiritual essence. And understanding the principles of that, how my mind works, how we are all uniquely, individually using this power of thought to create our experience uniquely of life. And that each of us has this ability to be aware in the moment that we are thinking and creating an experience. And if we're creating an experience that's from habit or from illusion, there's part of us that can insightfully see that and let that thought go to make room for wisdom, for that inner guidance to come through. I also learned that life is here to help us evolve in our understanding. So circumstances that come into our life are no mistake. My wife, one of the poems that she found that was her very first poem that she ever wrote was very short, and it said, "There are no mistakes, only the revelation of the inner self." There are no mistakes, only the revelation of the inner self. So even our failures, even our slips, even our setbacks are not necessarily failures if you can see their opportunities to point out blind spots, to discover something deeper about how you work, how you're creating your life. If you can see, if you begin to understand how you are creating your experience from the inside, life's not happening to you, it's happening from you. Your experience is coming from you because without thought, you couldn't have an experience. Have you ever been daydreaming and you're maybe in class or in group there while you're in treatment and you're thinking about something completely different? You've just been transported to another reality. And someone might say, call on you or whatever, and you go, oh, I'm here. So we're always living in our thinking, moment by moment. When we wake up to that simple fact that we're always living in the feeling of our thinking, not what we're thinking about, but we're always living in the feeling of our thinking of what we're thinking about. Just let that sit in there for a second. Whatever you're thinking is what you're experiencing. In my seminars, I show a video sometimes of these two goldfish, young goldfish, and they're swimming through the aquarium. And they bump into an older, wiser goldfish, and he says, hey, boys, how's the water? And both of them look at each other, and they go, what's water? I just love that. And we're like those goldfish. But what we're swimming in is a world of thought and consciousness. We're using this power of mind, this universal energy, this life force, through thought and consciousness to create our life. We've been doing it from birth and we'll do it to our death. We're always going to be living in the feeling of our thinking, moment by moment. And as thoughts change, feelings change. If I'm thinking, oh boy, I wonder if I'm going to get connected with these guys on Zoom tonight. I didn't get the Zoom thing. Wow, what am I going to do? You know, I signed on my old Zoom and it didn't work. So I'm starting to feel a little bit of anxiety, like, oh shoot, I said something different than that. But since it's with all you lovely people, I won't swear. You probably aren't used to that anyway. Ha ha. But when I just got quiet, when my mind got quiet, I had an insight. Oh, call Chris. So I called, I couldn't get a hold of Chris. She didn't answer. So I called the retreat. The guy at the retreat gave me her cell number. I found. So now we're connected. But that's an example of when we're up against a challenge or an unknown. When we get quiet, something will occur to us. A thought will pop into our mind that will give us the answer we need at that moment for that situation. So the inner guidance of wisdom is tailor-made to your life moment by moment. So for 40 years, I've been discovering the depth of that very simple understanding. And it has taken me not only into working in recovery as a counselor, as a trainer of counselors, but it's taken me into businesses. I've worked with the Mayo Clinic, worked with their physicians. I've taught these principles in India, in South America, all over the world. My books are in 65 countries and 26 languages. So I never dreamed I would ever write a book. By the way, I didn't even think I'd go to college. I was told by my high school guidance counselor I was not college material. So since I began to understand these principles, it has opened up opportunities that seem magical to me. I feel like I'm on this magical carpet ride, in a sense. And the people that I've worked with and other people who also begun to get an understanding of just how we are all creators of our experience from the inside through the power of mind, this universal mind. We could call it our higher power, We could call it God. We could call it the spark of life. Through that power, through the power of thought, that we are thinkers and that we create our experience with thought, our perceptions, and all of our emotions. And through consciousness, which is the capacity to be aware that I'm having an experience that's created from my thinking. That moment when you kind of up periscope and you see, oh, I'm making all this stuff up in my head. The future hasn't even happened yet, and I've already had a horrible time. It's so innocent. It's so, because this is like IMAX here. This mind of ours is like being in an IMAX theater. When you get in that theater and they turn the lights off and they turn the movie on, you get so absorbed in the movie and with all the sound and the vibrations now, and you forget you're watching a movie. You are in what we call suspension of disbelief. But if the film breaks, suddenly change. You realize you're in a movie theater. But when you're in that film and all the special effects, you are sucked into that reality, and it is happening to you, right? But you know you're watching a movie. You bought your ticket, you came in. Part of you knows you're watching the movie. Well, this awareness of how you're creating your own movie right now is your freedom, your free will to break the chain of habitual thinking. So when I just began to discover that and pass that on to my clients, families that I worked with, and the therapists that I trained, I saw that just getting a little bit of understanding, a little bit of that wisdom, raise their level of well-being. And as people in recovery live more in their resilience, in their mental health, in their serenity, in their spiritualness, their oneness with their spirituality, their desire to drink or to use or to look outside in any way diminishes. When you already feel fulfilled, you don't need something to fill you up. So that's the antidote to relapse. When we find true serenity, true peace of mind, our resilience, our mental health, by understanding how we're creating this, it gives us a freedom that we never knew we had, that we can be safe anywhere, that whatever is going on, there's always hope. There's always the possibility for new thinking. So when the pandemic hit 2 years ago, and I saw what was happening with everyone and how frightened people were and how divided people got and how preoccupied we became, and I saw the people who had an immunity to that, who had a deeper understanding of their own wisdom and trusting in this guidance system that they could absolutely count on every day to guide them no matter what is happening in this world, or no matter what's happening around us, that those people were faring way better than people that didn't know that. People who had this understanding and this resilience, this serenity, were able to go through this and recreate how they were with their families, recreate how they did their jobs. Companies that I worked with completely changed their entire brand, or they adapted to the changes in the economy because they didn't lose their psychological bearings. They stayed resilient, and I have a chapter in my book on working with Fortune 10 companies and how we were able to help leaders in Italy and different parts of the world go through this pandemic with their employees and their employees' families in a way that supported them and allowed them to actually thrive and to be resilient and recreate themselves. I worked with healthcare systems to prevent burnout. I worked with police forces and firefighters, people in recovery, people working in recovery, people working in mental health. So understanding the inside-out nature of experience created in a psychological immune system that allowed people to go through this turbulent time we're in with more mental health, more resilience. So that's what I want to pass on to you guys tonight. And that's why I wrote that book, because I wanted to give people an understanding of how you make a movie called your life, how you design it from the inside. Because when you begin to understand that, you feel empowered. You don't feel as much fear. And when you do feel fear, the fear wakes you up to remember who you actually are. This whole person, this person who has infinite capacity for insight and an ability to change. So that's why I wrote it. And the first half of the book is really kind of putting this in historical perspective. You know, we're in some strange times now, right? we're going through interesting, I hear that all the time. Boy, we're really in interesting times. We're really in interesting times every day on the news. We're really in interesting times. But we've been in interesting times throughout history. And when we've been up against it before, people have found a whole new way of thinking. The Renaissance, the Age of Enlightenment. Throughout time, we've made evolutionary steps in our consciousness. And this book that I wrote isn't just for people in recovery, is for really all people to help create that shift in our understanding of how we can recreate this world from wisdom and a spiritual foundation rather than fear, division, and anger. And so that's what inspired me to write the book. And there's a lot of stories in there about recovery, people in recovery, as well as normies, you know, people who are parents who have autistic children, teachers who are working with the challenges of educating our children during the pandemic. So that's why we don't have to suffer like we are suffering. We don't have to lose hope because it appears that things are hopeless. As long as you're alive, you can have hope. As long as you're alive, you can have a new thought that will change your entire life. That's how recovery happens. It happens with a transformational insight. When you have that insight, in the beginning, it's just, well, maybe I can recover. Maybe it's possible for me. Oh, no. And your thinking might say, oh, no, but you failed before or whatever. But when that new insight comes in that gives you hope, it leads you to the next step. What's the next thing that you do today? So when we discover that we have this inner resource of wisdom, of insight, of a spiritual connection that is our essence, that is who we are, we kind of know we're always going to be fine. If we just find some serenity, quiet our mind, and listen to that still small voice inside for the next step. It doesn't give you the whole book. It gives you the next step. Well, call your sponsor. Go for a walk. Take a hot bath. Read from that book on the shelf over there. That one's drawing my attention. Grab that one, because something in you says, I think I need to hear something out of that today. Or I need to call my mom. Insight comes in infinite forms. It's tailor-made to each of you individually. But you have to listen. And as you listen, like when, before I knew this, I didn't trust myself at all. And I would just buy self-help books. God, I have a whole library of them in there. I was always looking for the answer in a book or in a seminar or a workshop or something, because I did not know how to listen in here and to trust my own wisdom. But somebody else's wisdom is not going to be right for you necessarily. Now, sometimes other people's inspiration comes to you because it's the perfect person you need to hear that from today. That's inspired. And for you to listen to that is inspired. So inspiration is the voice of universal intelligence that we are all part of. So I want to read you one of my wife's poems that kind of says this in a different way than I've been saying, but she's just an amazing, wise, truthful person. And this is called Closer Than a Heartbeat. I speak not the language of the intellect. That isn't my way. I travel the pathways of your nerves and enliven your senses. I construct the fibers of your dreams and walk the corridors of your mind. I am communication at the subtlest level. My thoughts are your true desires. I am in every corner of your experience, expressing and guiding. Hear me, and I will ease your pain. Respect me, and I will show you the way. Love me, and you will love yourself and all the world around you. Listen, I am the whisper in your feeling. My words are ever present. Listen, learn the language of the experience. You have known it from birth. Listen, like an explorer in the wilderness, guided by the signals of nature, a turned leaf, a subtle yearning, my voice will become louder when magnified by your awareness. I speak through the body and transform emotions. I penetrate your dreams and fuel your desires. I am the essence, the driving force of your experience. Body, mind, spirit are all aspects of the whole. My language is simplicity, beyond intellectual translations that judge, complicate, and define. I flow, I transform, I am before time. Catch me in the moment. I have all the answers. I cannot be saved for the future or confined in the brain. My environment is in the moment. It is there that I thrive. Do not worry. I am available at all times. Closer than a heartbeat. I want to read you one story, and then I'm going to open it up for comments, questions, and start having a dialogue with you guys. Okay? So Mahima is a friend of mine. She lives in Nepal, and she was in charge of emergency preparedness for the country of Nepal. She had worked with the Chamber of Commerce, the airports, the police, the fire departments, the school systems, etc., to help them develop protocols in case there is, you know, a fire, an earthquake, a catastrophe of sorts. But she found that in all of the catastrophes that they had, that no matter how good the protocols were, if people got stressed out and freaked out and lost their bearings, they didn't follow their protocols and people died. People made mistakes. People were hurt. So she began to see that I need to understand the mind, how it works, so I can help people stay resilient when there really is a crisis. And so she went on the internet and she learned about, you know, duality and non-duality and, you know, mindfulness and this and that and the other. She just searched everything. And one of the things that she ran into was the three principles. And a colleague of mine, Dr. Keith Blevins, was giving a talk. And there was something he said in that talk that kind of stuck in her mind. You know how something you hear, well, you don't understand what it means, but you can't get it out of your head. And this sentence she heard was, "We are living in the feeling of our thinking," which I've used a few times tonight. We are living in the feeling of our thinking. What does that mean? She's just like, but she just, it was just kind of tucked back there in her brain. And then 4 years ago, the earthquake hit Nepal. 4,000 people were killed overnight. The country was brought to rubbles. It was just, everything was destroyed. Buildings that had been there for hundreds of years, temples, schools, everything. It was just, you probably remember it from the news. It was a horrible thing. And she's in charge of emergency preparedness for this. So, but she's going through it too. So she's in her grandfather's home with all of her family, nieces, nephews, sisters, brothers. They're all kind of huddled together, waiting for the next tremor from the earthquake. And every time there was a tremor, everyone, all the adults would just go, ah, you know, in panic. And when is the next one again? What are we going to do? And just all of this fear, as understandable, right? Your world's literally falling apart. And the little niece, there was two nieces, and they would play. And when the earthquake would shake, they would grab their mom or the dad's leg, and they would grab a hold. But as soon as it stopped, they would start playing again with their dolls, or they would laugh or whatever. And the feeling that those children had really struck Mahima. And she said, and I'm going to just read a little bit to you. Let's see, where should I start here? Okay. "There was destruction and devastation all around us after the first earthquake struck. 9,000 people were killed and thousands more were injured, were left homeless. We were overwhelmed with grief and fear as we watched the beautiful country pounded into a pile of rubble. My family and I were huddled together in my home. With each tremor, we were filled with terror, anticipating the next earthquake. Between tremors, we would wait in fear and imagine what might happen next. In contrast, my three-year-old niece would go back to playing between tremors and seem to enjoy having her whole family together in one place. Her laughter and play relieved and distracted us momentarily from our own panicky feelings. At one point, she looked at all of us and proclaimed, 'It's over. Don't you see? It's over.' Her childlike innocence and lightheartedness in the face of our stress hit me like another earthquake, a psychological one. She was being resilient in the face of danger, while the rest of us were feeling traumatized. The dormant thought that had been resting in my head for many months suddenly burst forth. 'We are always living in the feeling of our thinking each moment.' By witnessing my niece's resilience in the face of real danger, I realized what the three principles were all about. With this insight, my mind and my body became calm. From that moment on, my stress diminished and my resilience returned. I realized that the earthquake tremors didn't create my stress and my fears, my thinking did. Since that profound moment, I have felt more energy and more clarity of thinking, and I'm better able to respond to real and present dangers. Everybody did what they could to bring solace and help restore resilience in their communities in the weeks following the earthquake. I hosted webinars with international experts in the crisis response field and invited trainers from the UK to introduce these principles in Nepal to help earthquake survivors source their own resilience more effectively. Many organizations, groups, and institutions such as schools, chamber of commerce, insurance companies, community hospitals, young women's leadership groups, and more have since benefited from this training." And this is an interesting fact. The first line responders, the people who had to go dig through the rubble out in the field, dig out the dead bodies and the people who are still alive, would only usually last a couple weeks in the field. But we would do seminars on their and record it on their phones. And in the field, they would listen to the seminars about what I'm talking to you about. And they were able to stay in the field for 6 weeks, and they recuperated in a week instead of 2 weeks to go back into the field. So the practicality of understanding this, you can see in a tragedy like that, that's kind of an extreme thing. But our lives are full of earthquakes, aren't they? And tornadoes, and thought storms, and worry, and frustration. But when we can have that moment, and it just comes to us, you can't will it. But when it comes to us as a divine insight, and we realize, oh, one of the stories, Richard Carlson, the guy who wrote Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, was one of my best friends. He's dead now, but he and I wrote a book together, Slowing Down to the Speed of Life. And in that, I tell a story about Richard and his daughter. And Richard was grousing with his wife one night about having to have dinner with this couple that they were totally on opposite ends of the political spectrum. And he hated going there because the guy would always argue with him about his beliefs and blah, blah, blah. And he was going on and on about this in front of the kids. And Jazzy, who was like 4 years old at the time, his daughter, looked up and says, "Daddy, why don't you wait to have a bad time until you get there?" And I just love that. You know, out of the mouths of babes, this wisdom comes that shows you how it's innate, this wisdom. But that's what we do all the time. We have horrible times that never happen, all up here. But when we realize in the moment, insightfully, where our experience is coming from, it dispels the drama and the fears, and it helps us be in the present moment. And in the present moment, we always have what we need to survive and to thrive. So with that, I'm going to open it up. And people can also just raise their hand if you go down to reactions down here. And you can click raise hand. You can ask the question. And if you feel shy about that, you can go in the chat. And I see there's already a bunch of questions here. Joe, it sounds like resilience is a characteristic, but also a practice of turning again and again to our spiritual source. Would you speak to that? Thanks, Andrea. Resilience isn't really, it's an innate quality that can never be destroyed. Now, you can learn to be resilient, but knowing that you already are resilient takes a lot of the work out of it. Instead of having to do all these practices or techniques, if you just remember that you are resilient, you already have the wisdom that you need to deal with whatever life deals you in your hand. But you have to listen deeply, closer than a heartbeat. Like a tracker in the wilderness, you have to listen to the subtle yearnings, the subtle signs. And that takes serenity, that takes prayer, that takes meditation, that takes reflection, going for a walk. But you can even be guided, hey, I'm totally caught up in my thinking. I have thought storms all the time, by the way, still. And when I have a thought storm, my body lets me know through my emotions and my sensations and my heart rate and all of that. And for me, that's consciousness awakening me through my emotions to remember that I'm having a thought experience. It doesn't mean it isn't happening, whatever's happening, but how I'm responding to it, how I'm taking it in, how I'm experiencing it is my creation, my free will, my freedom. So, It's a practice in a way, I guess you could say. I keep practicing the principles. I'll never get to the end of it because life is always changing. It's always a whole new ball game. And so whatever life throws at you, whatever it gives you, knowing that you have this resource of resilience within you, of serenity, of wisdom, of divine guidance, that you are that. That is who you are. That's your true identity. And when you get in a crisis and you turn to that rather than analysis paralysis, worry, projection, oh, I'm going to have a horrible time at the party in 2 weeks. Daddy, why don't you wait till you have a bad time until you get there? When you have that insight, it just clears your mind and your physiology goes back into equilibrium. And from that quiet mind, you have hope. You feel encouraged. I can do this no matter what. I can do whatever life deals me. Today I had eye surgery. Oh, we're not going to give you any anesthetic. So I had a surgeon cutting my eyeballs. And I'm sitting there, I'm just breathing really heavy. I'm like, this really, really is weird. And I don't know if you've ever had your eyeballs worked on, but it's not a very comfortable. I've had it worked on with anesthesia, but I've never had it worked on without anesthesia. But I wanted to be present for you, so I didn't get anesthesia. But after that, I was just totally thrown into disequilibrium. My head was hurt, my eye hurt. I was just like, oh my God, how am I going to do this tonight? I am just a mess. Maybe I should cancel, you know? Those are the thoughts going through Joe Bailey's head. But I went and took a nap. I woke up and I just listened, and I started writing in my journal, and I just got all of this encouragement from my divine essence. Just have fun tonight, Joe. Enjoy these people. And that took me right out of it. It just cleared my head. The pain went away. I forgot about it till this moment. So whatever life gives you, there's always a divine answer if you listen. So next question. I don't see any hands up. If anyone wants to raise their hand, they can, and I'll answer it. Joe, this presentation is absolutely amazing. Thank you. It's exactly what I needed tonight. Thank you. Yay, AB. Be still and know that I am. To have that spiritual centering moment by moment, second by second. Right on. That's true. Did someone say something? I hear someone rustling. Does anyone have a comment, an insight, an example, or a question that they would like to share? Just raise your hand in the chat bar. Okay. Hi. Andrea. Hi, Andrea.
Just say thank you so much for giving us the example today of your eye surgery and your willingness to stretch and your open mind about what might happen afterward. Because for me, there is this fine line between self-care and stretching a little bit. And I could easily have seen in the name of self-care that you might have said, this is not a good idea for me to do. It's too much. I've had eye surgery. I'm taking the night off. I mean, I can hear me saying that to me or encouraging someone else to think that way. But I really think you draw out the nuance between keeping an open mind, not necessarily predicting what you were going to feel like tonight, and being willing to go forward. And thank you so much for talking about the encouragement that you receive from your own essence. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful statement, and what a beautiful reality to describe. Thank you for that. Thank you for all of this. This has just been a remarkable evening for me, and I so very much needed to hear these truths, Joseph. Well, we appreciate you.
Thank you, Andrea, so much. You're a beautiful soul. I can see that. Yeah. Hi, Robbie.
Hi. I was sitting here thinking, I'm going through all these pictures, my daughter's 40th birthday, and the pictures that I looked so serene was when I was practicing more. I used to go to Christine Heath, and she would always say, you know, like, it's just a thought. It's just a thought, you know, and I was thinking about how, yeah, it kind of felt like, well, am I dismissing what the other person is? But it doesn't even matter really what the other person is, because my interpretation of the situation is really, I look at these pictures and I'm like, oh, you're so serene. And you just, but I just remember that mantra. It's just a thought. It's just a thought. It's just a thought. Whether it's my interpretation, what somebody else is saying, or the serenity was definitely there. And I've had this just recently a situation with my husband where I kind of imagine that blew it out of context. And so when I could communicate, when I can get out of the, you know, story that I have about it, and ask the questions like, oh, that wasn't anything close to it. So yeah, thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah, Robbie, it helps us approach life from a more neutral state of mind. It's a neutrality. And in that neutrality, when you're going through whatever you're going through, you don't take it personally. And when you don't take it personally, you can, and you're in neutral about someone who's really having a thought attack or really upset with you or whatever, that neutrality will help them calm down. If you're, as a parent, with a child that's going through a crisis or whatever, if you react from taking it personally, oh, I'm a bad parent, or oh, you're a bad child, or, you know, you get into the ego, then it escalates. But when you can listen and stay neutral and just really listen, things will pop out of your mouth that are exactly tailor-made for that moment with that child at that point in time. And that's how it works. Wisdom is only good in this moment. It's like bread. You know, yesterday's bread isn't going to taste the same as fresh-baked bread. A fresh-baked insight, you can't live on yesterday's insights. You've got to live on today's insights, because it's a new world every day. What worked yesterday isn't necessarily going to be the right thing to do today. But if you don't know that, you just live by aphorisms or you know, go by, you know, belief systems and what you think you should be doing and da 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 da. And sometimes that can work as a placebo. But when you're operating in the moment from freshly baked insights and guidance of wisdom and spiritual insight, it's just amazing how incredible life gets to be. It becomes a divine dream that carries you through to new realities. It's literally heaven on earth. Now, am I always in heaven? No, I'm in hell frequently. But when I'm there, in my mind, I know where it's coming from, even though it looks like it's coming from my wife sometimes, or from the circumstances or the weather, or, you know, what's happening on the television set today. Then when I remember the truth of how it works only one way, you can only experience your thinking in the moment. That's where your experience comes from. That's a scientific principle. Principles are things that are always true. There's no exceptions. So these principles are the scientific foundation of psychology now. They really are giving it a true science. It's so simple, but it's so profound. And its application is infinite. The military is using this. The police forces, there are communities in I was just reading this story tonight about they had a community in California that had the highest rate of murder in California, fourth highest in the country. And Dr. Roger Mills, who was one of my mentors, went there because he had done a similar program with a similar community in Florida called the Modelo Project, which won the Martin Luther King Award for the model community many years ago. And he was recognized by the White House and, you know, Janet Reno at the time. So in California, they said, we want to replicate that program here in Homestead Gardens. And so they brought Roger in and Beverly Wilson Hayes, who was trained in the principles. And within a year, all the drug dealers were gone. There were no murders, where there were on average 4 per week in this community. The police were treated with respect. And they ended up, the police, Jerry, the police officer, got the California Peace Award for community policing, and they got a $5 million grant to rebuild this community, tear it down and build a whole new way of public housing. And it became a model for other high-risk communities. So there are veterans working with this. It's just that the applications are infinite. But in recovery, this is where my heart is in recovery, what I see happening with people in recovery, because a lot of people in recovery will get over alcoholism or drugs, but then they'll get addicted to relationships, or they'll transfer addictions to something else because they haven't really found their core essence. They haven't found what they're looking for. And so they look in a different direction, but outside. So when you learn, or you realize, I should say, your true identity, which is a spiritual essence, your well is full. You quit looking to fill it with something else. Now, does that mean you're just living in your own little world? No, you actually get to enjoy people more. You get to enjoy your job more. You are much more of a contributing person in your community, in your family, in your relationships, because you're coming from love and understanding, from respect, from a state of listening respectfully to other people. You're not all caught up in your ego. You're there. You're present. So like I don't ever have to prepare for a talk. Isn't that weird? I know all I have to do is show up. And, oh, Mary Brett is here. Oh my God, I didn't know you were here. Hi, Mary. it's like, I just had a little love for Mary attack. So when you're living in that fullness, that wholeheartedness, you have a protection from relapse. Not just relapse into addiction, but relapse into jealousy, relapse into fear, relapse into depression. You know, true mental health is serenity. And so the serenity prayer says it all. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There it is, the three principles in the serenity prayer. The wisdom to know the difference. So waking up to seeing you're having a thought experience rather than a direct experience from other people or circumstances gives you your power back and your freedom back. Isn't that cool? It's so cool.
Joe, I see that there is a sort of question comment from LD.
LD, how do you know to trust that voice inside? When I was drinking, it told me lies. Sometimes I fear listening to the voice, but it's getting much better. I'm paying attention to the truth it tells me. Thank you so much. That's a great question. You know, if you don't know how to play a musical instrument and someone's instrument is out of tune, you can hear it, can't you? You don't have to be a musician. It doesn't feel right. There's a feeling to that. It's out of tune. It's not harmony. The voice of the ego, it's got kind of scratchy. The ego has a feeling to it. It's very different than the true essence. And at first it's hard to tell because it's less familiar to you. But the more that you experience what it feels like to have an insight and to be guided by that, it starts to be in sharp contrast to when your ego is telling you to do something or not do something, or that you should do something you really shouldn't do. You know, all of this. You start to recognize the notes, the pitch, the sound of truth versus ego, versus fear, versus delusion. And it's tricky. Especially early in recovery, it's very tricky. But there are no mistakes, only the revelation of the inner self. So even when you screw up, that's on your side. It's a consequence. When you act on your ego or you act on falsehood, something that isn't true, you're going to get a feedback loop on that. And if you always have an open mind and an open heart, you can learn from mistakes. They're guiding you to the right path. So the word sin from the Greek comes from to miss the mark, mistake. So when you make a mistake, you get another take. You get, oh, well, that I thought I was following my feeling, but that was a disaster. And so if you have an open mind and an open heart and you ask within, what is there in this situation for me to see that I haven't seen that got me into that? What's this lesson teaching me? So if you go through life with curiosity and this true desire to be one with your true self, when you do make a mistake, I do all the time, by the way, I fall off my bike every day, but I know how to ride the bike. So I get back on it and I see, oh, I should avoid those potholes. That's a pothole there. Don't go in that, metaphorically. So we're always being guided by the wisdom of the allness back to our true essence. We're always being guided by the wisdom of the allness, the divine, back to our true essence. So failure is not a flunking grade. Failure is giving you a misdirection, showing you that's not the right way. And so you open your mind and see, what insight can I have from that? Rather than beat yourself up about making a mistake. Oh, this is life helping me to see that is not the way. So when you can, because the worst thing to get you drunk again or using is feeling like a failure, feeling hopeless, feeling like you're never going to change. You lose hope and you lose faith in yourself. You're going to have a tough road ahead. But if you can be open and realize that I've made the choice for recovery, and now it's just going to be learning the rest of my life. It's turtles all the way down, as they say. You know, there's no end to the insights that you're going to have as long as you're breathing here on this earth. I hope that answered that question. Did that answer your question about how do you tell the difference between delusion and insight? Did that make sense? Say yes if it did.
Yes.
Good. Do this if it doesn't. Okay, great. Let's see. That makes perfect sense. Thank you so much. Okay. How are we doing on time?
Well, it's 8:09, and I would say if anyone has any more questions, to go ahead and ask, and then we'll close.
Well, I sure have had fun with you guys. You gals, I should say, you gals. I hope you enjoyed it too. It's been a delight being with you.
Thank you, Joe. We are so grateful for you, grateful to you for sharing your gifts with us tonight. Thank you. It was very, very rich.
I'm glad you could take that in, Trish, and everybody. Thank you for listening. You know, that's the greatest respect that I can receive as a speaker, is for you to listen with such openness and willingness and curiosity. So you drew it out of me with your listening. Seriously. You drew it out of me. So you were a part of this.
So for everyone that is present tonight, Joe's talk will be available under resources in the Women in Recovery menu. So if you want to listen to it again or have someone else that you want to share it with, you will be able to find it there. Join us next month on May 25th, where... I'm sorry, I have to pull up the name here. Where Nell Hurley will be speaking on the topic of dating and intimacy in recovery. We look forward to seeing you again. Then, let's close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me
the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage
to change the things I can,
and the wisdom
to know the difference.